IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
The Army is failing to modernize and think radically about how it will remain dominant. Instead, it's tinkering around the edges, wasting time and money. That's the view of my next guest. Retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor is now an author and executive vice president of the consultancy Burke McGregor Group, and he joins me now. Colonel McGregor, good to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I always have heard it said the Army's mission is to fight and win the nation's wars. It can certainly fight them. Do you feel at the moment it can win them?
Well, first of all, the Army has this unfortunate habit of talking about war as though they are the only or most important participant. The Army provides forces like the other services, so it really fights as part of a larger joint force. And as for winning, I don't think the Army is really postured at the moment to defeat any capable enemy. And by capable, that means a nation state with armies, air forces, air defenses. Remember, for the last 27 years, we've been doing the military equivalent of clubbing baby SEALs, fighting people that are insurgents with no organization of consequence in the military sense, no air forces, no armies, no air defenses.
And you, in your column, your recent column, you mentioned the Army's planning process for that future. It's almost as if they're aware the future is different, but they're not really planning for what the future is.
Well, you know, in the private sector, whenever you introduce what people refer to as disruptive technologies, new technologies that promise to change the way you do business, businesses tend to form cells external to the business unit to try and determine just how much the organization has to change in order to adapt and maximize the impact of new technology. The Army resolutely resists this, and our Army is not unique. I mean, throughout history, armies generally do this sort of thing. And it's because the people at the top, as well as the industries that support them, are very comfortable with the old organization for combat. And until someone comes along and destroys them on the battlefield, their tendency is to argue that nothing should change. And the result is that they take whatever comes along that may be new and they shove it into the old organization. Inevitably, that results in failure.
Now, what are some of the new technologies you feel the Army is not inculcating properly, or are you talking about new technologies a potential enemy might have that they are just not equipped to deal with?
Well, we always have to be prepared for the unfortunate aspect of surprise. I mean, there's always the chance that you will encounter an adversary who surprises you with something new that you don't have, or simply surprises you by using something new or different in a new way. But what I'm talking about is something that's been well underway, certainly since the late 1980s, and that is the integration of new precision strike weapons. And these new precision strike weapons range from mortars to artillery to rocket artillery to surface-to-surface missiles, and now we talk about loitering munitions and unmanned systems. Integrating those with space-based, terrestrial-based, literally from seabed to space sensors that provide you with surveillance, reconnaissance, and ultimately the intelligence that arises from these various platforms. The point is that you have the opportunity now, in ways that never existed before, to rapidly integrate information and act on it quickly with precision strike. This has to change the way you organize to fight on the ground. And right now, we're still organized to fight much as we were in 1942. In fact, that applies to most armies in the Western world, in the Middle East, in Africa, and Latin America. And that's a prescription for mass destruction, frankly, because everything is predicated on massing people in order to mass fires, to concentrate human beings in order to concentrate their actions and efforts. That's got to change. So what the Army needs to do is it needs to set aside a group of people, some number, 200, 300, 400, 500, give them the tools to look at a variety of these systems, then put a force on the ground and experiment with them. Find out what will work, what doesn't work, and what has to change. And that's something that the Germans did very effectively between 1927 and 1935. And the results were very obvious in 39 and 40. So we're resisting that. Instead, we've got a group of generals, and they're trying to do what the French army did in the interwar period, essentially preordain what should or should not change, all with the goal of keeping the old organization.
We're speaking with retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor, an author and executive vice president of Burke McGregor Group. And was the move, say, from a division to the brigade structure, was that kind of a step in the right direction? I mean, do you think they need to continue organizing into smaller, more agile units?
Well, actually, it was meaningless because what they did, and this was at the time to avoid doing what I was outlining and still advocate, which is to eliminate divisions completely, and then to build an organizational structure that's larger than the current brigades but smaller than the divisions, because the problem with your so-called brigade combat team is that it still relies very heavily on external support and external so-called enablers in order to be effective on the battlefield. So what we did is we took the old 1942 organization and we said we're going to deploy it in pieces instead of deploying an entire division at once. Well, we'll send the division headquarters, then we'll send brigade combat teams, and then we'll send the division support command, the division artillery command, and so forth. So you assemble the old organization at the other end of the deployment. You get nothing out of your so-called change because you don't shed unneeded equipment and you haven't built something new to deal with these new conditions on the battlefield that I described.
And when you speak about the modernization force, how would the exercises work? It sounds like they would have to design exercises with real people and perhaps live ammunition to test some of this stuff.
Well, of course, absolutely. What you do first is that, of course, you want to model some possibilities in simulation. But you have to set aside your prejudice, your predisposition to simply reenact another version of what you've already got. You've got to look at different possibilities. You have to be reasonable and realistic about what human beings can and cannot do. Then you pick platforms and you pick technologies. You look at automatic mortars that are precision guided. You look at new forms of rocket artillery, new loitering munitions. These are unmanned systems that can stay in the air for 2, 3, or 4 hours, that carry 25-kilogram warheads, operate day and night, that can literally attack you from above very quickly without any notice at all. And these are also linked to other top-attack munitions that can then pour in against you in great volume. This is the way the Russians are organizing right now. These are the things that they're trying to field rapidly. Then you have to look at the lethality of the battlefield. We have a very tragic obsession with light infantry, men with rifles. In this battlefield that I'm describing, which requires mobility, dispersion, and protection, they're dead. So light infantry, as we have it today, which constitutes almost 250,000 of our force structure in the Army and the Marines together, is really not going to survive on a modern battlefield. So it becomes a niche capability. Then you've got to look at what you need, and you've got to armor up most of your force, and you've got to provide it with air defense. You've got to provide it with these top attack munitions. It's got to be very mobile, and it can't operate on the roads. Wheeled armor, wheeled vehicles are roadbound, and if you operate on the roads, well, that's the easiest place for the enemy to find you and kill you. So we're not being realistic. We're almost behaving the way the French did in 1912, 1913, 1914, when they talked about the spirit of the bayonet and essentially overwhelming enemies with men with rifles who died by the millions in World War I.
Yeah, after they lovingly reworked and reworked and reworked their Plan 13 or whatever they called it.
And, that's right.
And you mentioned Russia, and more in the military leadership, we hear the term near-peer competitors, which I think is code word for China and Russia. And I guess if India wasn't on our side, it would be India. And
Well, there are others. I don't think you should underestimate the Turks at this point or the Iranians. I think yesterday's ally could end up becoming tomorrow's opponent. We live in a new world that people once again are very reluctant in the United States to embrace. So you put it all together, and I think what we have is enormous quantities of money being squandered on the old force. I mean, just look at the billions of dollars that we want to invest in old tanks and old Bradleys, trying to upgrade things that were designed in the 1970s for use today. We would be much better off rapidly prototyping new capabilities off the shelf, things that exist in many of our allies' countries that produce, in many cases, much better ground combat equipment than we do. And we can rapidly prototype these things. We can determine what we think works best, and then we can mass produce it here in the United States. And again, when I say mass produce, it's not going to be 10 or 15,000 copies. we're going to make much smaller numbers of copies because we're inevitably going to have a smaller professional force. And that's something else everyone resists. The age of mass mobilization armies is over. Before the first reservist shows up to fight, in most cases, wars will be decided. That's our problem right now. So we need very capable, standing professional forces that can rapidly deploy and fight wherever they have to fight, whether it's in Central America, frankly, or North Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe. Any of those places are real possibilities over the next 10 years.
Retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor is an author and executive vice president of the consultancy Burke McGregor Group. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.
We'll post a link to his Breaking Defense blog and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.